This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Vanity Fair.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
I am delighted and proud to introduce him as Academy Award winner.
And the Oscar goes to.
And the Oscar goes to.
The winner, it's a tie.
And any little girl who's practicing their speech on the telly, you never know.
Mom, I just want an Oscar.
The Oscars to me have always been about family. I watched them one with my parents when I was a kid, and now as a husband and father, I'm able to share that with my current children. My wife makes a wonderful spread with popcorn and movie theater candy and really decorates everything in the whole house. We have our own pool with the family. So Oscars to me always hold a special place in my heart because it's always meant family to me.
I am Katie Rich, and that voice you just heard was from our listener, Wes, who responded to our request last week to hear voice memos from you, our listeners, about how you celebrate the Oscars and how you watch them. And on today's episode, instead of interviewing someone who's competing for an Oscar, we're going to hear those voice memos and talk about our own favorite traditions of watching the Oscars. Joining me, as always, is Richard Lawson.
Hello.
David Canfield.
Hi.
And Kara Warner.
Hello.
And guys, that voicemail is to just here to kind of kick us off to, I think, kind of nicely set the tone of why it's fun to talk about how we watch the Oscars, not just what will actually happen on the awards themselves. Did that bring up any childhood memories or other specific memories for you guys of your family specifically surrounding you while you watch the Oscars?
Yeah, I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast before, but the first year that I watched the Oscars the whole way through, because I used to have to go to bed, you know, before like the big categories happened. The first year I did was 97, and it was, you know, so the Titanic year. So I guess it was 98.
Of course. Oh.
And I came home from piano practice, and my mom on the dining room table had all this food that was themed to the different Best Picture nominees. It was the first year I'd seen all the Best Picture nominees in the theater, and I got to stay up till the very end, and it was so exciting. So my mom, I think, really... if she didn't want a movie-obsessed kid, she made one that night.
Yeah, my mom was definitely my Oscar viewer with me. And I know we watched the Titanic Oscars together, but the really vivid memory I have is that there was the Saving Private Ryan year. She had gone to bed, everyone else was in bed, and I was like writing her a note in the kitchen to be like, hey, here's what happened, you missed the Oscars. And I was like halfway through writing Saving Private Ryan when Shakespeare in Love won. And it's vivid memory of like an Oscar twist happening. Probably the first time I'd ever clocked onto something like that. So thank you to our moms. You made us Oscar podcasters. Sorry. I don't know if that's what you wanted.
My family was not an Oscar-watching family. I just feel like I saw clips on Entertainment Tonight the next day, and then it wasn't that I ever saw the full show. So,
Kara, you didn't run outside to get the newspaper to see that Holly Hunter had won Best Actress for the piano like I did?
I should have.
Shaking your fist in the air saying Angela should have won it.
Yeah, exactly.
I had kind of the opposite experience. My parents are very loosely industry adjacent and also very cynical people. So the Oscars were extremely present growing up. But they were not necessarily celebratory, if that makes sense. It's like I would know who was in the conversation when I was very young, and I would, you know, be maybe hyper aware for somebody my age of what the exact, you know, mechanics of Oscar season were. But once I got really into them, it was a very solitary activity. I mean, I would sometimes watch with my family, but for me, and I believe we have a few voicemailers who would appreciate this. Voice memoers? Sorry. Is that?
Sure.
I like voicemailers.
Voice memoers. You know, it would be very important to me that I could focus on the winners on the show and that there were not a lot of outside distractions. And so my best and most vivid memories are really just me watching TV by myself. Even if there were people around me, in my head, I was by myself.
Focus with a monk-like intensity.
Oh, wow. Tony Shalhoub.
When I was in college, for the 2003 Oscars for 2002 movies, my family friends invited us to this like charity dinner where they were going to show the Oscars and everyone dressed up. And it was like kind of fancy. And my parents were like, oh, that'll be fun. And I sort of reluctantly agreed. And the satellite feed cut out when Nicole Kidman's name was about to be read. And I threw a fit. I mean, I was so mad.
Yes, we're definitely going to get to the people who have a similar kind of purist attitudes. Yeah. But I do think there is a case to be made for having a crowd with you for certain Oscar moments. And this next voice memo from Jen, I think, captures something like that.
Hi, Little Goldman. It's Jen. I just wanted to share my favorite Oscar viewing party story. It was from my freshman year of college, which happened to be the La La Land and Moonlight Oscars. I convinced all of my friends and people from my classes to all pile into the small TV room of one of the dorms of the small liberal arts college that I went to. And we all watched in a packed room. And by the time the commotion started at the end, we all got up and everyone was yelling. And it was so exciting. And it was truly one of my favorite Oscar viewing moments.
So I think that really is the classic example of you kind of need someone to look at and be like, are we really seeing the same thing here? My version of this is I was on the Vanity Fair Oscar party live stream that year, and I'm sitting in this like tight little like slightly damp room in that's a tent with Mike Hogan, our former co-host, and Phoebe Robinson, who is our co-host on the show, kind of waiting for like John Hamm to come in for an interview. And we were all like casually looking at our notes, and then this rising panic of realizing something unexpected had happened, and we had to be live on the air in like 20 seconds after the show ended. But it was crazy and it was memorable, and I'm glad I had other people around me for it.
That was the first show I got to attend.
Oh, wow.
So that will be.
Where were you?
I will.
She was handing out the ballot. She fucked up.
You've been fired for PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Oh, God. It was, yeah, my first time attending. And I was in the balcony, the upper balcony, kind of with all the media. And not to, like, Scott Mance is a fellow journalist in our world, and he is obsessed with La La Land and, like, could not have been more gaga for La La Land. And he was sitting two rows in front of me. And the thing that was amazing is that you instantly knew something was wrong watching it because people came out of the wings, not like into the frame of where the camera would be on the broadcast, but some of the people with the headsets and stuff came out.
Like even as the La La Land guys are speaking.
Yes, yes.
Interesting.
So it was sort of like, what is going on? But when Jordan, the La La Land producer, was like, sorry, guys, it's you. And I just remember Scott Mance turning around, his face, like the full emoji where the hands are on, like the ghost face where your hands is like, I will never forget it because he was just so gung-ho. And anyway, it was amazing. It was an amazing moment.
I did want to correct one thing from Jen's call. They said that they were a freshman in college when the La La Land thing happened. That's not possible. I think they meant third year of grad school, but yeah. At least, right?
Or full-blown adult, no, which everyone
no, right,
was.
No one's
then,
that
right?
young, right?
Yeah. It was also a milestone year for me. That was the first year I covered the Oscars. What was it, 7 years ago?
Yeah,
I was at Slate at the time. And by this point, I had established a tradition with my then boyfriend, now husband, that we would watch every year, and we would get drunk and it would be amazing and very special. And I remember this creeping feeling of devastation that I was in a Slack channel with like people reacting very, very aggressively and intensely in real time. And I just kind of had to stay up to date with it. And I couldn't kind of live in the moment. And I was like, oh my God, is this what it's like? And it was like a sad moment for me. Even
you abandon your husband.
Well, but also like that you don't get to be in the moment as much. That was my fear. Cause then I was so overwhelming to keep up. And I think it was on like a 3-second delay. And so I was getting all these reactions in real time. So it's like, it's a weirdly sad memory for me, even though like, obviously now I'm over that. But at the time, it was like, oh, things are changing.
I will say one last thing about this. I, as an interloper journalist, not with Vanity Fair, I got to go to the Vanity Fair after party or the Vanity Fair Oscar party after that moment. And I'll never forget Faye Dunaway was like dining out on the attention. Like everyone was trying to come up and talk to her. I remember Halle Berry, just watching Halle Berry approach her and like with like awe, just being like, what happened? And Faye Dunaway could not have been more delighted. Like just everyone needed to talk to her at this after party. It was honestly, what an incredible experience. I'll never forget. It was amazing.
She's like that meme of the girl smiling at the house on fire. Like, look what I've done.
Exactly.
I will say my version of this for Jen, almost exactly, not quite 20 years, anyway, earlier than that, was Crash and Brokeback Mountain. Like that I was watching in college with a bunch of friends. We got to the end of the show. It's kind of the reverse outcome where like the movie we were all rooting for like didn't win in the end. But it was a similar thing of like a bunch of college kids being like, what? What are we seeing here? And again, I was glad I had a group of people to surround me for it.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase, every day. Then, grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply.
One very common theme in this, but Richard, I think you mentioned kind of early on, is the idea of food for an Oscars party, which I find very interesting because the Oscars themselves like famously have like a concession stand and like not really that much food. But if you are watching the Oscars at home, food can be a really important element.
What's up, little Goldies? First-time caller, long, long, long-time listener. I'm Joanna Robinson, and I would have to say far and away my favorite part of an Oscar viewing party is the food. And what I mean by that, food and drink. And what I mean by that is you have to make sure your menu is crammed with as many eye-rolling, groan-worthy pun titles as possible. Here are some examples from menus of years past. Bohemian Raspberry Tart, Chives Out, Zero Dark Thirsty, and Wingside Story. I mean, come on. You're excited. So don't be embarrassed. This is my best advice for an Oscar party. Don't be embarrassed. Lean all the way in. We love movies. We love the Oscars. And I love puns. So enjoy. Bye.
Joanna.
That, of course, Joanna. Was our beloved host emeritus, Joanna Robinson, who I could not have done this episode of Collins without her. But I think she's hitting at something that's very true, and I've never really stopped to think of why. Why are Oscar pun foods such an essential element? Because they absolutely are, but I don't really know why.
Oh, it's just another way to be silly. I don't know. It's fun. I did write some suggestions if people are struggling.
I don't know, of course.
If you want me to give them, but
that's why you're here, Richard.
Okay, yes. So I just did best pictures, and I did not do one for Killers of the Flower Moon or Zone of Interest. Those seemed a little too serious to pun about, but Scone of Interest if you want to do it.
Love it.
So I have an Americano Fiction, which is a decaf coffee cake.
Because you don't want to be up too late when the show's over.
Yep. Anatomy of a Falafel. So it's a deconstructed falafel. So it's kind of like a chickpea salad.
That's great.
Barbie and Bop. the whole Dover sole.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Minestrone soups. That's my tortured maestro. An Oppenhammer, which is an open-face ham sandwich.
That's great.
Past livers, foie gras. Ooh. And then a poured things cocktail bar.
Oh.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, you can go on forever with that.
Yeah. Yes, you can.
I feel like we have to give a shout out to Justin Chang, who is newly the film critic at The New Yorker and has annually published a list of Oscar pun food, which I really think is above and beyond. I'm looking at his list last year he did for the LA Times, which included tuna tartare, Michelle Will yams, and Marcel the shell with udon.
I remember that one.
He's maybe the best in the game. No offense to you, Richard. And I feel like
trying to compete with Justin. Although I do question a party where I'm eating yams and tuna. I don't know.
Sure, you need the menu to go together. Yeah. We've got a couple other listener voicemails about their Oscar party menus. I do want to give a special shout out to Michael, who I think you're going to hear from first, whose menu for this year really goes the distance with a lot of themes from this year. Include I'm Just Chicken Wings that go with a bomb hot sauce. So it's like a Barbenheimer combo. So we'll share that full one on social media. He gave us permission, but let's hear from a couple other people with their menu items.
Hi, Lynn Goldman. So my name is Michael. This year for our charcuterie board, we're calling it the anatomy of a board, and I'm going to make a little dead guy in the middle of it out of like meats and cheeses. We're having candied pecans for maestro. We're going to have I'm Just Chicken Wings. And we're going to get like the bomb hot sauce so that we can have a Barbenheimer moment. We're making some fry bread with an Osage recipe for fry bread for Killers of the Flower Moon. And of course, we're going to have just a bottle of Jim Beam for the holdovers.
Hey, this is Nathan. This year's menu is Anatomy of a Meatball, S'more Things, May Decemberries. Nice little mix there. We'll have some buckets of Poppenheimer. And then lastly, we're making some lobster dip. The best I came up with was Lobster Downey Jr. Pretty bad, but I can't wait for the big night. And I can't wait to hear you all talk about it afterwards.
Hi, my name is Becca. I'm watching from Minnesota. And some memorable moments include roasted rabbit for the favorite, a really pretty pink handmade pasta that my friends liked for the Grand Budapest Hotel, and really rare or seared rare venison that was speared with roasted carrot for Get Out. I thought that was fun. This year, I'm trying to be creative, but also be delicate with the subject matters of Killers of the Flower Moon and Zone of Interest, and trying to honor those movies without being cute. And so I've got some ideas and I hope it works out.
I got to say, I do appreciate everybody looking at the Zone of Interest and thinking, no, I'm not. I don't want anything.
It is amazing how consistently that is going.
Although I will shout out to Sarah, who emailed us and suggested a Cone of Interest Sunday bar, which I do think is okay. I would support that.
Well, the family depicted in the film would like that.
Which is what you're going for. You want to please those people above all.
I like in those calls, we heard different approaches. The last caller from Minnesota was doing more sort of food that reflected a theme in the movie or something in the movie wasn't necessarily punning on the title. And then the other two were sort of more leaning in that direction. So there's really, you can go a lot of different ways with these menus.
Yeah,
totally. I'm impressed. Michael's with his mom, who's a chef, and they were using an Osage recipe for their, was it flatbread, fry bread?
I thought that was perfect. Impressive.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I want a list of anatomy of menu items because there's got to be so many variations this season. It's the most open-ended.
Michael's menu also, speaking of thematically, his menu also included just Portuguese custard tarts for Poor Things since it's set in Lisbon, which are delicious and I would happily eat. And I think that is a brilliant move.
They had those at a Poor Things party recently, so they're right on target.
Everyone should eat them.
Poppenheimer, I really like too, just for fun. I'd like anything that the direct correlation and the chicken wings, but that was Michael's.
Poppenheimer seems like a good, like lazy, like, oh God, I didn't really think this through, but like popcorn, Poppenheimer, yep. Done. Yes, like now we have something that's thematic, which I have been in that position, so I respect it.
What do we think would be in a rustini? It'd be be good.
We really missed our chance with that Best Picture nomination, didn't we? Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking about how if The Taste of Things had gotten nominated, people could be just making 10-course French meals. Like, they'd forget to watch the Oscars.
That's a real task for the themed food menu. You know, if you're really reflecting what's in the movie, you're basically recreating a gourmet French meal.
Hey, little gold man, I took out a second mortgage on my house to make The Taste of Things menu authentically. I quit my job.
I'm also thinking about the year of the Revenant, like what people might have done.
Oh God, a lot of rare meat. I feel like every year, like there's the Get Out venison, there's the Revenant buffalo heart or whatever it was.
Raw bison liver, wasn't that?
Bison liver. Yeah. God, how could I ever forget that horrible phrase? Well, there was another theme that emerged in these, which is a little more of the dark side of how you pick and choose who you watch with once you have prepared all this delicious food. So we're going to hear from Catherine and also John about their words of warning about how to do it right.
Hey, Little Gold Men hosts. This is Catherine from Winnipeg, Canada, your friendly neighbors to the north. Like probably a lot of your listeners and maybe yourselves, I've been an Oscar obsessive for as far as back as I can remember from an inappropriately, uncomfortably young age. And I used to watch the Oscars with lots of people, sometimes family, viewing parties, etc. But I never enjoyed it because there was too much talking. Maybe people didn't share my opinions or have any opinions as they hadn't seen any of the movies. Also, I think I made other people uneasy because it's strange to hear like a 7-year-old with a hot take on The English Patient. So needless to say, I've since amended this practice. And for the past about 10 years, I've been watching with my best friend, Ryan, who is generally aligned with me on many of my opinions, sees the movies, is passionate, checks all the boxes. But we normally order Chinese food and watch just the two of us. But what's notable is this is a silent viewing party. We generally eat and chat during the red carpets, but when that red light comes on and it is live, we are silent. Notably, the guest list is also just two people. My current boyfriend has asked to be invited. He's been denied. And Ryan's husband has never asked because he finds the whole thing creepy and too self-serious.
I'm with you and Ryan. I support.
Again, this is my whole MO, so.
That is so funny. That's how I watch sporting events that I care about. The Oscars,
Yes, Kara, that's what this is.
Touche.
All right. And now let's hear John's version of a somewhat similar story, I think.
The last time I went to an Oscar party was in 2007. And every time a film won that wasn't The Departed, all the straight men in the room would immediately begin talking loudly over the acceptance speech. So eventually I left at the start of a commercial break and I ran home, fending off a mugger in the process, and finished the rest of the telecast alone in silence. And for the last 17 years, that is the only way I will watch the Oscars. Now my husband is allowed to be in the house on Oscar night, and that's a privilege he's earned because he knows that you don't talk until a commercial break, and if I cry, we don't acknowledge it. Otherwise, I make an epic cheese board and I shut off my phone, and I have no intention of ever watching the Oscars any other way.
I just need to interject really quickly. Do you mean to tell me that you were at an Oscars party where people were talking over Jennifer Hudson and Beyonce performing Dreamgirls? Because that was that year.
Ooh. David, he said straight men.
I don't care. That's unacceptable. That was a formative moment for me. Anyway, sorry.
That wasn't a mugger, by the way. That was Vera Farmiga. She needed somewhere to watch the Oscars.
She wasn't nominated after all.
I feel like maybe Catherine's husband and John's husband, who are like on the fringes of these Oscar obsessives, need to like team up and like figure out their safe space for watching the Oscars so that they their Oscar freak spouses can be left alone in peace.
I loved how the last lovely gent said he has earned the right to just be in the house. terrific.
Well, Richard, you'll be watching the Oscars at home this year, as will I. And my husband, I think, has learned to like just keep a wide berth because I'm like typing frantically the whole time. Do you have to have a similar setup in your house?
Andrew knows that I do have to work during the show, so that kind of changes the timbre of it a little bit. If I was just watching casually, I think there'd be more like, oh, who's that? Or like, what are they nominated for or whatever? But he kind of does keep quiet. But also, like, he lives with me, so he's been has had to osmose a lot of this throughout the campaign of the season already. So, but yeah, I like to keep it quiet. I did go to a Golden Globes viewing party at a friend's house this year for the first time in years, like, because I normally have to work. And I did work while I was there. I brought my laptop and it worked out pretty well. Actually, that Golden Globes review did pretty well traffic wise, if memory serves. Maybe it helped that the show was a catastrophe, but
it did.
But yes, no, I do. It's pretty like monastic in my house on Oscar night, because I have to be focused. And also, I don't want people talking over Jennifer Hudson and Beyonce performing Dreamgirls.
Yeah, what a nightmare. We should have trained a camera on ourselves watching the Emmys together, Richard, in a Los Angeles hotel room, just keeping like the studied silence except during the commercial breaks.
We did well.
Yeah, we've been doing this long enough that we know what the needs are.
I think we need to get a dispatch from Rebecca, because she will be doing this from home for the first time in many, many years.
That's true.
You may remember, Katie, that I had horrific food poisoning a few years ago.
I watched
them from home. It's not really a, you can't use that as an example, though, because it was mostly just suffering. anyway.
No, I remember one year I was on maternity leave, as Rebecca is during the Oscars, and I think my husband was expecting me to like be a little bit more chill about it. I wasn't. He was like, oh, no, this is not going to be a casual experience at all. Well, we got a listener question, an email from Robert, who was kind of talking about, he loves to get dressed up and go out with friends and have a cocktail and watch the Oscars, and was asking for suggestions of places to go. And honestly, I think my only suggestion would be like rent a room, like get a private dining room in a restaurant with a TV in it. Like, I think it's really a gamble to go out to a bar or something and watch the Oscars, because your expectations could be so different from those around you that it could ruin the whole thing.
Yeah, you got to be careful. I mean, sometimes we'll have friends over to watch Drag Race and people will be talking during the show, and I'll turn to Andrew and I'm like, I'm sorry. He's like, it's fine. I'm just going to watch it again tomorrow. But the Oscars are a different matter. You know, it's that night. You have to do it that night. So yeah, I think a private space, Katie, is a good bet. Maybe get a private karaoke room and see if you can turn that TV to the Oscars.
Oh my God.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And then you can sing afterwards.
Swirling above you.
It's a nice idea, though. I mean, I feel like I don't have any suggestions, but if you can find a place with a dedicated, higher brow viewing crowd, then you should do that. I mean, I would love that. I just don't know where I would ever find that. I have the same, when people go out for Drag Race, which is kind of a tradition in the community, it is, if you actually want to watch the show, it is assumed you will be watching it twice. So
yeah, exactly.
That's my sort of sample example of like, it's very difficult to do that in that kind of environment.
If any listener does want to go to somewhere public to watch the show and lives in New York City, I wonder, I don't know this for a fact, there is a great old gay bar on the Upper East-ish side called Townhouse that's mostly an older clientele. I believe Tim Gunn used to be a regular there. Maybe they do some sort of sophisticated grown-up viewing party. I don't know. Look into it.
We also had a listener ask about being at South by Southwest during the Oscars as the second year in a row. Richard, I guess you were at South by Southwest during the Oscars last year, right? Am I right?
Yeah, I was rereading my review of that broadcast the other day, and I was like, I have no like sense memory of doing this from my couch. And I was like, oh, right, because I was in the Omni Hotel in Austin, Texas. Yeah.
Well, this person, Laura, asked like about a watch party. And I actually got a recommendation from Joanna, heard earlier, who will also be at South By, and says there's a bar called The Liberty where she has watched the Oscars before and may watch it again. So that would be the place that that I would recommend checking out if you want to risk watching it with others, which, you know, if you are John with your cheese board home alone, it might also be the preferred method.
I'm Chris Murphy.
I'm Richard Lawson.
And I'm Hilary Busis. We are from Vanity Fair's Still Watching podcast. Next up, we're watching the new HBO show, The Regime.
Madam Chancellor, let's keep the gloves on.
This is not a confrontation. We're just saying what's true.
Academy Award winner Kate Winslet is our chancellor as she leads a faux European autocracy in turmoil.
We'll be watching week by week as The Regime unravels.
And we'll be talking to the stars along the way.
New episodes of Still Watching will drop every Sunday after The Regime airs.
I wanted to wrap this up with a look toward ideal future plans, maybe, like what you would do for the Oscars, given all of your options. And I thought this one from Amy captured what is a very specific but now very appealing dream for me.
Hey, this is Amy from Central Florida. So what I mostly do for the Oscars is make some snacks, some sangria, and maybe even play some Oscars bingo, or I just send y'all my drunken thoughts on the evening. But I'm hoping that one year when I can make all my friends' schedules align, my friends and I will put on our finest formal wear and go walk around Disney's Hollywood studios and take some pictures on our fake Hollywood and Sunset Boulevards. And then we'd head back to the hotel and watch the show from our room and with some snacks and wine and just have a great time. I love the podcast, and let's hope Lily Gladstone gets her Oscar.
That's a great idea.
I love this idea. Yeah.
I would love some drunken voicemails. Those are some of my favorites.
Yeah. The drunkest person wins a prize. You get a Vanity Fair tote bag. the most incoherent.
No, I like the idea of cosplaying the Oscars and of kind of bringing it out into the public, maybe. You know, I think in the real world, I think we've all encountered people we know who are like, oh, when are the Oscars? Like, I hadn't really thought about it. So I like the idea of we're kind of like spreading the good news of the Oscars far and wide by dressing up and wandering around places. I fully support doing that.
Our own Comic-Con.
Yeah. Own Comic-Con in whatever city you happen to be watching.
In whatever city you choose. It's a great idea.
And the question I actually had for you, David, from watching Inside the Oscars, which we'll be doing again this year, as you have, Kara, do people in the auditorium pay as much attention as you want them to?
So I've sat in a few areas, and it's interesting. The press, you know, at the beginning of my career at going to the Oscars, you're up in the rafters. It's very difficult to see, and I don't want to say that there are open seats, but there are some open seats because they're not on camera, and therefore people are, you know, mingling in the lobby or by the bar or whatever. And it is striking how it feels like you are in the nosebleeds of a sporting event where people have had like five beers and don't even know what's going on. It's just a very different vibe from what you would expect, and one that I found a little bit disappointing just in terms of, I was at the Oscars. I wanted everyone to be paying attention, even if you could barely make out who was on the stage. Now, I have since had better seats in some years, and it is a very different experience. I mean, if you're close enough where you're sitting around like publicists and agents, then you can really see the intensity and the focus of people who have a lot at stake in these categories, and that can be quite exciting. But everybody who goes to the Oscars also knows that the place to be is the bar, and eventually you will see an incredibly starry crowd just sort of gathered around there while certain categories are being announced.
Yeah, I would say I didn't have that experience, in the press balcony, as I like to say it. I've been there 30 times, but there's like a transient element because a lot of us are reporters. So you're in the show for a little bit and then you go down. Those of us that have access to the bar area, you know, kind of come and go in those seats. So there is that element. I didn't feel that there was people that are not paying attention as much, but it is very fun to come and go just because that bar area is so fun, especially when you have nominees that their category's over. So then they're just kind of chilling, or any performers that are finished sort of kind of lounging in the lobby. And that, interestingly, gets sort of noisy because people are really not paying attention, even though there's TVs in the bar area. Yep. And so it's amazing when you hear all these people that are so dedicated to the silence of the experience, and people at the Oscars are actually also not paying attention to the TVs of what happened.
I'm still ashamed of, and I won't name the musical performance that I missed, because I don't like that I missed it. But it was because we were in the bar, and I remember the star was like walking off the stage, and I was like, wait, did we just miss that? And nobody cared except for me. It was very strange.
Yeah.
I think it's a similar experience at the Vanity Fair dinner, which, you know, when I've been there in the past, I'm like in a room working 200 feet away from where the dinner is. But they have the show on during the dinner and people are watching it. But then I think of something like the Year of the Slap, where all of a sudden something crazy happens and you really need that like regrouping at the bar at the Oscars, which I know happened too, of everyone kind of pulling out their phones being like, what is happening? So that, you know, you might not have everyone's attention all of the time, but then they all need to rely on each other to, you know, figure out what's going on up there. Well, that does it for this very special call-in episode. We truly cannot thank all of you enough who sent in your voice memos and your emails and have shared your stories. It's been such a pleasure to focus on that aspect of the awards race. And I think the part of watching the Oscars that got a lot of us into this in the first place. We'll be back on Thursday with our final Oscar predictions, whether we feel ready for it or not. And of course, the Oscars are this weekend, and we'll be covering them up and down and sideways all weekend. So there's so much to come from us. Find us at Vanity Fair, on social media at VF Awards Insider, and on our own. I am at Katie Rich. And Richard?
Rylas.
And David?
David Canfield, 97.
And Kara?
Kara J. Warner.
Our editor and producer, as always, is Brett Fuchs. And if you send us an invitation in the mail to your Oscar party, you never know, we might show up on your doorstep.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Oh. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.